It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel takes a comprehensive look at gun deaths in Wisconsin and analyzes detailed records county by county. We explore this new report based on statewide analysis and conversations with concerned gun owners, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. John Dietrich is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter, held an O'Brien Fellowship in Public Service Journalism at Marquette University that was integral to this project on gun deaths. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Your reporting reveals that homicides, police shootings, and accidents account for less than a third of all gunshot deaths in Wisconsin, the vast majority being suicides involving firearms. How does that discovery challenge our perceptions about guns?
Well, I appreciate those numbers just sort of settling. I've worked at the Journal Sentinel for almost 20 years now, and I've written a lot about those first three categories, and those are really important, and we're not really mindful of not setting aside or suppressing, if you will, those categories. But I think it's really important, and as I talk to public health officials, researchers and so forth, that the full picture of firearms deaths be understood. And I think what it really brought home for me as we looked at county by county data is that while the circumstances behind a suicide and homicide accident and so forth are naturally different, there is a commonality, if you will, of the means, and it is affecting everybody in our state, albeit in some different ways.
When you map it out county by county and you look at the state as a whole, I was taken aback just by how pervasive it is, that it's, the perception being that this is just confined to Milwaukee, perhaps. When you look at that map that you created, what do you see?
Well, it's really interesting. That was from the beginning, a thought about the map and how it changes when you include suicide and when you adjust for population. What you see is a map that really changes from the focus being in southeastern Wisconsin. And again, not trying to diminish at all what is a really serious issue in Milwaukee and some other urban areas of the state with homicide, but the map changes pretty significantly, and the focus sort of visually goes to northern counties that are much smaller and are feeling a large burden, a heavy weight of these gun deaths. I went through the data, as I said, for these counties, and it is a lot of suicides. In some of these counties, it's 100%, that homicide is not a factor, say, in a county like, for instance, Iron County or Wood County. Some of these counties, it's 100% suicide. So you see the map change pretty significantly. It's a surprise. Milwaukee's not number one for gun deaths in the state. It's number seven when you adjust and include suicide. Let me just, before we go further too, let me just say that if somebody's hearing this and they're feeling suicidal, I just always want to make sure that people know that there's a resource, dialing 988. And I've just been trying to make sure to include that in our messaging in this project.
Yes, and it is through all of your reporting as well. Gun-involved suicides in Wisconsin exceed 500, according to your analysis of the state health data. And you found gun suicides are primarily taking the lives of rural and suburban residents. What might be causing that pattern?
Well, it's complex, and I think one of the things that was really reinforced for me speaking with experts like Sarah Kolbeck and Jean Papalia, people who've worked in this area, Debbie Trader, I think their caution is against finding a simple solution or a simple cause, if you will, and then solutions are not as simple either. But you know, we're looking at a combination of financial stress, of people being isolated, some pandemic, you know, results. Alcohol is a factor for sure in our state. Availability of firearms are a factor. And I think what's important and what was interesting to me and was reinforced a number of times is that gun owners themselves are not more prone to things like mental health challenges or even crises. But the point that was made is because of the means and the lethality of the means, it is by far the most lethal means of suicide, that when those things come up, it's really important to understand that there needs to be separation from those means in the times of crisis. That you know, so through maybe a death of a child or a divorce, something sudden like that, when the means are there and they're available, that's when the situation happens. And what's interesting too is that the research shows if even some minutes can be put between those means and the crisis, that can make the difference.
Wow.
In cases such as that.
We're talking about this new report on gun deaths in Wisconsin. John Dietrich, investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And you can join in at any point, call in with a question, share your thoughts at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. John, as you talk there and talk about the diversity of people in Wisconsin, rural, urban, our state having a rich hunting tradition, I wonder, does that complicate the firearm deaths in Wisconsin?
Well, it's part of the factor to consider that is one of the reasons that somebody would own firearms would be hunting. And it's a great love, as you said, for a lot of people. There are people who have that, you know, the gun that they've used and adored for many years for hunting has ended their lives in cases. We saw cases like that. I think it's what's really important to understand is how people view the firearms and how they think about it proactively around things like, this is something that is a love for me. But maybe at this time, because of I tell a story in the project about somebody, Debbie Trader, and her husband held guns for a friend who loves hunting. But they were in a period of time that was very difficult. And so what she and her husband did is they went and sat with the person. They had just gone through a very difficult situation, and they held on to those guns. For a while, everybody agreed that was, you know, for the best. And Debbie and her husband took them to their house. This happens actually a lot. Research is showing about 30% of gun owners report holding guns for other people, other fellow gun owners in times of distress. And then the guns came back to the person for hunting, but they're kept in a different way right now. And so I think there's like a thought of it doesn't necessarily mean in some of these cases that the guns are gone forever, but that there is a thoughtful process and that others are involved in this and that person can hunt today and that there's some precautions put in place.
John Dietrich, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, sharing this new analysis on gun deaths in Wisconsin, a comprehensive look. Be part of the conversation. Call in with the question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter John Dietrich, whose project on gun deaths in Wisconsin provides a really nuanced look with statewide figures and these in-depth interviews with gun owners. And there's space to talk. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John, you interviewed dozens of gun owners for this series of reports. What surprised you? What came out from their perspectives?
Well, I think one of the things that I write in the project, an essay, reporter essay, which is sort of different for me. I've not done a lot of those in my career, and but I felt like it was appropriate because there was sort of a personal journey that went on here. Some of the stuff that was really surprising to me was things like, I mean, it's sort of obvious now, but I didn't really think about it before, but there really isn't a gun community. You know, that phrase, among others, gets used. And what I found with that, there were, there's a lot of people who own this item, and they have different views and different life experiences. And so rather than try to take these interviews that I talk to people and sort of flatten them and say, well, like, everybody kind of thinks this way, or this is a surprising thing, I wanted people's stories to sort of be able to breathe and be a little bit more expansive. And so that's what we did in this case, is tell people's, you know, experiences of how they have engaged with the issue of mental health, firearms, what their relationship is with guns, how it was that they began to, when they first owned a gun, what the experience was. And so I think I think the word nuance is a good way to put it, because I found that it's more complicated than sometimes, you know, what we see on social media, which I think is more maybe indicative of the edges of some of these conversations. And I think there's a lot more nuance in the middle when I talk to gun owners. I just would also say too that there are different definitions that people have, and so we went to some efforts to not use some of the catchphrases that get used. And again, I'm not sort of casting aspersions on colleagues. I've used these phrases for years, so I see, because of the fellowship, some time in this. But terms like gun violence, responsible gun owners, things like that are interpreted and defined differently. So when I would talk to gun owners, I realized that there was not a shared understanding of some of those phrases. So rather than use those phrases, we got a little bit more descriptive. And that was an eye-opening thing for me.
How did you convince gun owners to talk with you for this project?
This is a really good question. So at the beginning, I thought, this is going to be very difficult. And, and there were some challenges with people being skeptical. Again, the media in general, we don't have, we don't score super high right around Congress, I guess, sometimes in trust. I don't know. You know, it's part of the job, right? So I get that, we're balkanizing to a lot of people. And sometimes we bring news, people just, they don't want to hear, and it's part of what we do. But I did wonder about that. I mean, I think part of my background was helpful in that I covered the military at one time when I was in Colorado Springs, and I traveled embedded a few times, including to Iraq in 2003. So I had familiarity with guns. I'm not a gun owner. That's something that came up quite a bit from people would ask. But I've shot a lot because I've been out with the military. I used to cover the police department in Milwaukee and so forth. And I have a number of friends. Certainly. And so I guess that was helpful to some degree. But I think also it was my friend Jim Stengel, who retired from the paper. He and I had lunch, and he said it's almost like this was a story in plain view that we couldn't see, or I couldn't see, until I started calling people. Our former editor, George Stanley, who's a gun owner, he's the one who put me on this idea to begin with. He said, I think you'd be really surprised when you talk to gun owners. And I was really, just honored by the willingness that people had to talk to me. And like I said, it started off with like one or two or three, and then it just became, dozens of people, gun owners across the state, who talked to me, who, again, brought a variety of different life experiences, backgrounds, opinions, and just were super gracious in trusting and sharing their stories with me.
Giving their time, giving their honesty and transparency. So important to this. John Dietrich with us as we talk about gun deaths in Wisconsin. John is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter and headed up this project. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Steve is here in Stoughton. Steve, hi. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for what I think is a really important conversation. I wanted to share a story, ask a question. I went to a session for caregivers of patients with people with dementia, and the session was about behaviors and how to respond to your family member with dementia. And what was interesting was that about 50% of the people there talked about their family member who had dementia, who owned guns, would bring the guns out, would handle them, and, you know, how do we respond to that when they want to keep their guns and all this stuff. So it was very, very interesting, and I was honestly shocked that there were that many people saying this was an issue for them. But I wonder in the research if dementia comes up and how that, like, it seems like a simple thing that we could just deal with. If you have dementia, we take away your gun kind of thing. But anyway, I'm curious to know.
Steve, thank you so much for sharing your story with that and that education session. John, go ahead.
Yeah, that is a really good point. And that's an area of research. There's a researcher out of Denver that I've spoken to quite a bit, Dr. Emmy Betts, who's worked in this area. This is a real issue, especially as we have aging population, individuals who have firearms, you know, and are approaching the sort of autumn of their life and so forth. And this hits home for people as to like what to do in this case. And I know a lot of families are entering in to this conversation. One of the things that Emmy Betts talks about is the volunteer nature of, that's always where these conversations start. Whether somebody is distressed in an organic, you know, sort of mental illness way, and dementia would be sort of an offshoot of that. Entering into these conversations and talking as a family, there are other measures. We don't have red flag law in Wisconsin, though there are measures where, you know, somebody, there is temporary detention of individuals. But those are extreme situations. And what Dr. Betts advised, and this is exactly what's being talked about now, is entering into this as a family and saying, you know, what sorts of things can we do at this point? Sometimes the individual who might not be aware and their wherewithal, they might not understand where they're at. And in those situations, perhaps more significant steps should be taken in that. And I think we're going to see more of that as the population ages. And it's just a really real question too, when people are approaching the end of their life, kind of what happens to the firearms? And I know of situations where people will have essentially done this without the person's knowledge. That can be fraught, you know, to like remove the firearms without telling the person. And then, you know, if they have the wherewithal to remember that they at one time did have a firearm, you could create a situation. But it is an emerging area that there isn't a simple solution for. But I know, and I really appreciate, Steve, you bringing this forward, because this is a really important issue and one that I think a lot of families are grappling with.
You met gun owners and sellers trying to connect others with mental health services. Can you describe their efforts?
Well, this is a big category. So we had a piece. I met a gentleman named Mike Sedini. Mike's not from Wisconsin, but he's been to Wisconsin a lot for different gun events. He used to be a gun dealer, like he was in a gun importer. And he was really struck by the reluctance among gun owners to talk about mental health and mental wellness, that there was a gap between that world and the gun world. And he also would describe how he would come to gun shows and some people he knew, friends, were just not there anymore. And nobody was really talking about it. And it was because they had died by suicide. So he launched this group called Walk the Talk America. And what was so interesting is that through that group, and then also this effort, we talk a little bit about gun shops stepping into this as being a storage location for people. There is an emerging conversation around mental health among firearms owners to say, hey, is this is something to be more open to, and that some gun owners, for various reasons, are very reluctant to go and talk to therapists. Not all, don't want to paint a broad brush, you know, be careful in that area. But what Mike Cedini and some others are saying is, hey, let's be honest and let's say, hey, when we need help in the veteran community, that's emerging as a conversation, and in other places, let's also just be honest that there are some really bad outcomes that have happened and are happening with firearms.
John Dietrich, investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, describing his work to report out gun deaths in Wisconsin. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel publishes a first-of-its-kind analysis on gun deaths in Wisconsin. The series, called Behind the Gun, sheds light on deaths that are difficult to track and shares these wide-ranging perspectives of gun owners. Call in with a question, add your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. And if you or someone you know is struggling or in crisis, call or text the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988, three digits, 988. John Dietrich is an investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, worked on this project. John, we heard from Suzanne in Manitowoc County called in, and Suzanne is wondering if there's data detailing how many people in Wisconsin die by suicide using a gun under the age of 18. And then Suzanne has a follow-up question, wants to know how many people use a gun to take their own life due to age or terminal illness. Did your data from the counties go into that?
The age categories are available, not for every county. This effort, Wisconsin has a decentralized death investigation system, so we went out to every county and pulled that data, and so we got various kinds of data. So sometimes we got age data. And I can tell you just from broadly from the State Department of Health, which has these numbers, you know, sort of across the state, that there is a category, you know, under 18, and that is a growing category. In terms of the overall numbers, the largest category of gun suicides are white males over the age of 50 in rural counties, though there's some important categories that are growing. Among African American, for instance, in Milwaukee County, we've seen some uptick. African American and Latino girls in Milwaukee County, we've seen some of those increase. And again, the CDC numbers that firearms are the number one cause of death for children right now. Suicide is part of that. And it's really important in that case to talk about access to firearms, that in this case, that somebody who owns a firearm, they themselves might be, you know, in a good spot with mental illness or mental health or mental wellness, if you will, but somebody in their house may not be. And a number of gun owners that I talked to were very mindful, not just of their own situation, but who is with them in the house. Do they have small children? Do they have teenagers who could be going through some, you know, some difficult times? And it's really important in that category to secure the firearms, that they're not accessible to people who do not have access or should not have access to them. And that certainly would be a teenager who's going through a difficult time. But yes, that is a category that has been growing. And as for the first time last year, as you mentioned, we crossed over 500 gun deaths by firearm in Wisconsin. And the percentage of firearm deaths, it's gone up 100% since 2004. And in that time, suicide is a big category. And to your second point about the end of life, that is a category that I've heard from other other individuals. And that's clearly, it doesn't come out in the data because some of the circumstances around it are not marked. So you have to go into the detail of the reports to see what was going on. But we have a very powerful story from Kurt Green, who is from Manitowoc County. And he tells that he's the coroner of Manitowoc County. And he's really interesting in that he is a strong Second Amendment supporter and a strong Democrat. And he's had a lot of this sort of tragedy in his life. And his grandfather took his life. He had cancer. And it's a very difficult situation for families. And it's come up quite a bit in the numbers that's what's happening in a number of these cases.
You bring up Manitowoc County Coroner Kurt Green, who was particularly cooperative with this project. What do you think motivated him to help you with this project?
Well, it's interesting. He did jump off, if you will, of the data. So we went out to all 72 counties, and Kurt came back with data that was way more detailed, even than, say, Milwaukee County or Waukesha or Dane. And because he's creating categories that are not required by the state. He is interested, truly, as he's an elected coroner, to communicate with the people of Manitowoc County about what's going on, not only in this category, but things like overdoses and so forth. He's a former paramedic. One of his deputies is an ER doctor. So they have a level of professionalism that, not every coroner has in the state, certainly. His personal story, I mentioned his grandfather dying by suicide when Kurt was young, when he was 6 years old. But then he had other cases that had come up. His sister and his nephew were murdered by his brother-in-law, who then took his life. And he himself has a situation with his father, who was approaching the end of his life. And dementia was a factor there. And he was asking for his guns back. And Kurt and the family were like, no, we're not going to do that. And then his day job, so to speak, is coroner. He sees a lot of this. So Kurt was really motivated to share this data. There's going to be an event that they're actually planning in Manitowoc, where he's going to talk about Manitowoc's data, Manitowoc County, for the residents there. And I'm going to come and attend that and talk a little bit about the plan is for me to talk a little bit about what we found statewide as well, to help inform the public as to what's going on.
Meanwhile, digging just a bit into your reporter's notebook here, the State Health Department collects comprehensive detailed data about violent deaths, but the department wouldn't provide you with that information. Why was that?
Well, there are what's happening here is there are two laws that are colliding, as they explained it from the state. This data has been collected for 20 years. The CDC directed the states, and Wisconsin was one of the first ones to do this. And so this is collecting data not around just gun deaths, but any violent deaths, so car crashes and things of that nature, for public health researchers and officials to act upon it. So the state collects this data. It's closely guarded because there is a state law that protects the privacy of individuals after death and protecting their families' privacy. There is a way, so under the open records law, which is the law that we typically use as media, that's how we get records. There is a way to get the data. Researchers routinely get it. And because I was at Marquette, we sought the data that way. And the state said, we just can't, we can't sort of see past the fact that you are a reporter, so to speak. So we know you're going to write stories and you're not a researcher in the sort of traditional sense. So we're not going to give you the data. It was frustrating because the state collects this data. They've been behind, but they collect this data and they put it together, but they wouldn't give it to us. So then my students and I ended up sort of embarking on this large effort to go to every county in the state. And the coroners and medical examiners 71 of 72 counties gave us the data. It was, like I said, a varying quality, but you can see online, there's a lookup tool that my colleague Andrew Hahn created that will allow people in every county in the state to basically get a snapshot of not only what's happening statewide, but what's happening in their county.
John Dietrich is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with a new report on gun deaths, comprehensive statewide look. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Marcus in Milwaukee is here. Marcus, hi. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Kate. So I went to Tulsa West in the 90s. My friend's father, who was the associate principal, was gunned down in the hallway. This is constantly a topic that we keep addressing, but we're not addressing in terms of trying to come to some sort of resolution on how to lower gun deaths. In terms of the dementia thing, would it be possible to take and create some sort of technological solution where people who have guns and are getting up there in age are required to get a safe that has a two-person system to access the safe? That way the owner could still maintain their dignity and could still go hunt with family members, but there would have to be somebody else there who is then able to open the safe with them to make sure that they're cognizant and that they're at their functioning level, and then make sure that the guns are stowed safely.
Marcus, thank you. What about tech interventions and innovations, John? What did you find out?
Well, this is really interesting. First of all, my condolences for your loss. I grew up in Wauwatosa, so I remember this case quite well. And you're right. This is a conversation that's gone on for a long time. What struck me a little bit that at least I wasn't aware of is these conversations among gun owners, and particularly among conversations in that group around technology. There's new technology that I was not aware of to exactly what you're talking about, which is two-party access to safes. There are multiple reasons why that might be the case. There is technology now that allows that could, you know, have cell phones so that a loved one or trusted person could be, you know, accessed. They would be notified if the gun owner wanted to get access to their firearm. This is coming up right now with people who need a break and they maybe do not want to remove firearms from the home entirely. So they might to factor that with a spouse or a family member, or they could lock themselves away from them for 30 days. The technology allows that. And it's advanced to the point where I think there was some years ago skepticism about the accessibility, but the technology has come, has been explained to me, a long way. And so you're seeing discussions among gun owners, including at gun shows, say this is a really smart thing. For years and years, I didn't know this, but for years and years, gun owners have been, as a precaution with their own mental health, have put pictures of their loved ones on their safe. So when they go to remove their gun, they're thinking about the person that is closest to them, their children, spouse, and so forth. That was sort of an old school way, and it's still done. Mm-hmm. But technology provides some new opportunities. And I think that that's a really interesting observation in the area of dementia, that here would be a possibility to keep the dignity, but also provide separation so it's not immediately accessible.
John Dietrich, investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, providing insights on his new series called Behind the Gun, detailing gun deaths across the state and interviews with gun owners. Be part of this conversation. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
The people of Wisconsin are at the heart of everything we do here at WPR. Hi, I'm WPR Director Sarah Ashworth. Beginning May 20th, we're reorganizing our networks to make it easier to find the news and music programs you love. All your favorite hosts will be on WPR News and WPR Music, ensuring a bright future from our service to you. Find everything you need to know about these exciting changes at WPR.org/new.
Today at 11 on The Larry Mueller Show, our physical therapist will talk about neck pain and take your other PT questions as well. Join with those questions at 11 on The Larry Mueller Show.
All of us want to know what's going on, but only some of us want to know the why. That's where we come in. 1A is a place for the curious. Daily conversations for those looking to make sense of our world. I'm Jen White. I hope you'll join me next time for 1A.
This morning at 9 on the Ideas Network.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how Wisconsinites view guns in a new special report from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that provides statewide analysis on gun deaths and in-depth interviews with gun owners. The series, it's called Behind the Gun. Call in with a question. Share what's on your mind. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John Dietrich is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. John, on the Sentinel's website, you can see these really detailed statistics, county by county, and a breakdown there. I mean, why explore this data snapshot in your own county, your own community? Why is that valuable?
Our initial proposal or statement was that how do gun deaths affect you where you are, wherever you might be reading this. And I think the thought, and it's understandable why this is, that I think that the focus goes to certain kinds of deaths. I have a friend of mine, and I quote him in the story, the essay. He's a former Army intelligence officer, and he said, John, you know, part of the problem in the media is that you guys focus on the unusual and you suppress the usual. And I sort of defensive about that at first. And I said, well, in this category, I think, it, you know, and others, but in this category, I think it's definitely true. So there is this large category of deaths that people in parts of the state might not know about at all. Even people who maybe have some inkling of this, because especially around the issue of suicide, there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of secrecy, there's not a lot of public reporting. So people have been very surprised. And I think what we wanted to bring home to people is that here's a little bit of information where I should say where people's privacy is protected. We're very mindful of the concerns that the state has and that others have. And Andrew Hahn, our developer who created this, was careful and respectful in how we created this. But we wanted to give people a sense that this is affecting you in ways, because it's not homicide. Maybe some of the steps would be different. They would be, certainly, whether those countermeasures be voluntary, government-involved, a combination thereof. But that it is affecting every county in the state, albeit in different ways.
One county, Trempealeau, didn't provide you with gun death data. Why might that be?
Well, yeah, so that was an interesting case. The coroner, Bonnie Kinsey, is the she's an elected official. So the way it works in Wisconsin is that there are counties that have elected coroners, and then there's appointed medical examiners. So mm-hmm. that coroner is like the county clerk or so forth. They run for office, their constitutional office. And so when they're, because they're a constitutional officer, they're, you know, in control of the records that they keep. And our reporting indicated, you know, as we were going through all the counties, this was one county where we were not getting any cooperation at all. And we did involve lawyers, first for from Gannett Corporation, Tom Curley, and then Tom Kamenik, who runs a firm here in Wisconsin. And through those efforts, we were able to get data from 71 of the 72 counties. Bonnie Kinchy was very clear that she was not going to give me the records or give us the records. And again, we worked all different ways. I actually went to Whitehall, which is the county seat. It's south of Eau Claire County. And it just, she just was, as we say, not feeling it. It was not happening. And so that was the one county where we didn't have, you know, any data. And, you know, Bill, leaders from the FOIA Council in Madison commented clearly that, you know, he felt like this was a violation of the open records law, that at least Bonnie should have shown us or allowed us to inspect the records. But she would not do that. I do have to highlight that I was really encouraged by all the other counties that came forth. And there's a lot of people out there who are really doing their best, underpaid, under-resourced, working with their own computers. Sometimes people who are doing this work out in counties who were super helpful and cooperative with us. And I was really, really encouraged by that. And, you know, and I have to say, you know, disappointed and discouraged what happened in Trempealeau.
I notice as we talk here, you use a lot of people's names as we go along this conversation. Sources' names, the people who worked on this effort. It almost feels as if it takes a village, so to speak, that line to really capture a bigger sense of what is happening, a comprehensive look at gun deaths.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It really was when, and that's where what the reporter's essay was able to really do is allow me to really help recognize how this effort started. And again, this, like I say, the story wasn't my idea. George Stanley, it was his idea, our former editor, and Greg Borowski, who's now our editor in chief, has very kindly and amazingly stayed as the word editor on this, and Daphne Chen, who's our investigations editor, she shepherded it through. But I mean, this started, you know, sort of in an office at Marquette, last summer, and it just became clear to me that this work was really important, that we were telling stories and we had an opportunity to tell stories in a different way, and it was going to require it was going to require a lot of people to sort of bring this to light. And, you know, my Alex Rivera Grant and Ben Schultz were my students at Marquette, and they just did amazing work. They just were unflappable through the process. And I really feel blessed by all the support that came at Marquette. Dave Umhafer, who some of you will know from his work at the Journal Sentinel, is the director over at the O'Brien Fellowship. I just remember late night conversations with people trying to get our heads around what is the framing of this? What are we trying to see? And I think that, you know, it ended up being encapsulated in the project name, which is, you know, as you've mentioned, Behind the Gun. What we're trying to do is not only get that data, but most importantly, to get the human stories, the humanity, and really lead with that. And that was, you know, that was our goal. And bringing in all these other folks who helped us, I couldn't have done it without them.
We only have about 20 or so seconds left. You want to continue reporting and covering this issue. Where does it go next?
Yes. So our next piece, we're looking at attitudes among gun owners, opinions, practices. That's an area that we're working on now. We're also very interested in some of the cases that have been raised by your listeners that are intervenable, particularly accidental shootings. Mm-hmm. And that's a category, while a small percentage, there is some places for public health officials and actions to really have an effect there.
John, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your reporting.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
John Dietrich, investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, worked on Behind the Gun as part of an O'Brien Fellow in Public Service Journalism at Marquette. If you or someone you know is struggling or in crisis, call or text the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988 or text HOME to the National Crisis Text Line at 741-741. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.